shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
And the first thing that I wrote down and what my reaction was.
Our rating may go away because our sponsors are leaving us.
Somebody would go in, order marijuana.
I'm Fred Thompson, and I approve this message.
I heart well, the next news.
What the hell? Wow. World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Yes, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Every night here, baby, we go through the looking glass and we take you to places other talk shows cannot take you to, where truth is our bitch. And you can find out more about us at philhendryshow.com. One of the wounded at Sanity shooting says Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck are to blame. And they were able to find him and say, aha, will you repeat that on camera? Yes, I will. And he's a veteran, too, so they really got themselves a package there. We'll talk about that later on in the show. Jersey Shore continues to break records for MTV. Phenomenon is Jersey Shore. Big ratings, big show there on MTV. Ted Bell will join us to talk about Jersey Shore in a moment from Ted's Beverly Hills Steakhouse, and DeVernon Dozier coming up later on retirement, on baby boomers, on all kinds of stuff. And our affiliate spotlight tonight, WXNT 1430. That's just a bizarre drop. 1430 on your AM dial in Indianapolis and Grand Rapids, WTKG, 1230 AM on your dial.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Hey everybody, Ted Bell here from Ted's of Beverly Hills, bringing you this portion of the Phil Hendry Show, and I'm going to be on to talk to Phil about some of these issues of the day, including this Jersey Shore.
Here come on down. Ted.
How's business, huh?
You know what? It's doing very well tonight, Phil. We've got a good crowd, and a very good crowd, although we have had that turnover, and I wanted to talk to you and your audience about this Jersey Shore. We do an awful lot of entertainment business here. We have a lot of people in the business.
Jersey Shore is Jersey Shore, the MTV reality show, which is essentially about a group of young Italian-Americans, and I say Italian-Americans because they're very decidedly ethnic, are they not?
Oh, I think it's a love letter. I think it is a love letter from the Italian-American community to the rest of us here in the United States. It's a very compelling program, but we did have some turnover here as the result of that television show, and why I want my staff to watch that show, as well as recommending to your listeners, viewers, Phil, to watch the show. It is a slice of what is really central in American culture right now, and I want my wait staff, and I want my office staff, and I want my bartenders, everyone, to be up on what Americans are watching, and one of those shows is Jersey Shore. And even if you're Italian American, I think you want to at least embrace that program for what it is. You may not like it, or you may think it's slightly offensive, or you may think that my take is, I don't know which it is.
Well, did you let a couple of your waitresses go?
We let a waitress go, and we let one of our sous chefs, one of our kitchen staff go. Both of them Italians, and it had nothing to do with them being Italian. It had to do with the fact that they did take exception to my wanting my staff to watch Jersey Shore. And they took exception to that, and I said, I understand. I said, I'm not saying that you are like those people. I said that I want you to watch that show so you can see what it is Americans are enjoying.
And why do you want your waiters and your waitresses to watch certain TV shows, to interact with the customers?
Well, like I said, Bill, we have a very big clientele. We have an entertainment clientele. We've got a young clientele. We've got a Friday night to Saturday night crowd here in Beverly Hills. They're going to come into town and have dinner, all different ages of people. So we want our people to be conversant. And when I ask them to watch a TV show, goodness knows, I don't know whether or not they're going to watch it or not. But when they actively seek me out and say, I will not watch that show, then, of course, I have no choice.
All right, Jersey Shore is about what?
Well, I mean, they got DJ Pauly, they got DJ Wow, they got Sammy, Vinny, Ronnie, Snooki, Mike the Situation. These are all characters on this show that live together. They live, they love, and they laugh in the in New Jersey. And they're Italians. Now, the reason why I tell you repeatedly that they're Italians, this show is revolutionary, Phil. Hold on for just a minute, Phil. I'm sorry. What? No, no. Take him to the back. This show is about, it's for the very first time, it is a television program whereby an ethnic minority or an ethnic group is portrayed on television. And we are welcomed, we are invited to laugh and to enjoy their antics and enjoy it for what it is.
What, meaning you're laughing at them because they're Italian-American?
You're laughing at them because they're Italian-American. Now, the last show that I remember that was on television that had that kind of courage, and I'll tell you, I think it is courage. I don't think it...
See, this is what you and I were talking about. Isn't that... What, you have two waitresses or two employees that you fired, two Italians, because they thought it was an offensive show.
And again, they may think it's an offensive show. I wanted them to watch the show just so they'd be conversant with the show, so they so that the people that come and eat dinner here would not feel as if they're talking to two people that are disconnected from reality. Now, they didn't like the show, and they told me they didn't want to watch it, and that's when I had to let them go.
Why would you fire them if they said, we don't like the show, we find it offensive?
Because at the end of the day, Phil, I'm the one that pays the, you know, I signed the checks. I'm the one that issued instructions. You can't say no to a boss and not have him react. And that's what happened. I wanted them to watch this show, Jersey Shore. It's a love letter from the Italian-American community. They invite us to essentially laugh at them. And the last time that I saw a show like this, it was Good Times on ABC, which was a black family living in a housing project. And that was a show that basically invited you to turn it on. There's black people. Laugh at them.
And do you really think that that is why Good Times or even Jersey Shore attracts an audience, because they're ethnic or because the principals are viewed as primarily ethnic or ethnically different?
Well, I think so. I do.
I mean, Jersey Shore, too.
Jersey Shore, too, yeah. I mean, the number one thing about Jersey Shore, and you need to understand this because I've watched every episode. I never miss it. And so I know more about Jersey Shore than probably anyone watching your program right now. The number one thing about Jersey Shore, and the number one thing you notice about Jersey Shore, are the fact that they're not just young kids who are, you know, kind of halfway between the Anglo culture and hip hop culture, however you want to say it, but that they're Italians. And they're very, very much the New York Italian. Hey, you know that?
And yeah, no, I understand. You're not telling me it's like a mafia movie or something.
No, it's not like that, but everything is hey. All right. The last time I saw a show that was similar was Good Times, because you had them living in a housing project. They were poor. And the young boy, Dynamite, and all that. So you were basically being told, here are African Americans, laugh. Now, I don't mean to...
Well, I mean, that's... I never got that. What I got was a struggling family.
Yeah, but they were a struggling family, Phil, but they were a black family. And these may be struggling kids, but they're Italians. And it's the first time since Good Times that we have been invited to watch a show and laugh at people because of their ethnicity. And I think it's a... for me, it's a wonderfully freeing moment.
Well, I know the show is successful. I've never heard anybody say that the whole reason why the show's successful is because they're Italians.
Well, that's not the whole reason. I mean, they're young and they're hip and to be perfectly honest, they're stupid. But what makes this show different from all the others is that you are welcome to laugh at them because of their... and I don't want to use a word that's offensive, but you know the words that they use because of the guinea, they use the word guinea.
And all right, I don't want to use any of those words. You understand?
But you know what I'm saying?
There's a stereotypically Italian-American...
Exactly, yeah. But it's more than just saying stereotypically Italian-American. It is as if you are on the street and you want to just blurt it out, not in a hostile way, you want to say it in a friendly way, you want to say in a very friendly way, you, oh, you're a, God, are you a, you know, and then use a word.
Use an ethnic, a slur.
Well, that's just it. I think that Jersey Shore, Phil, and I think if anybody wants to disagree, they may. Jersey Shore has taken those words like Guinea, like Greaseball. They're not slurs anymore. They are words of affection. I don't know how else to say it.
All right, let's hold just for a second. I'll give our number out. It's 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. Ted Bell joining us from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Is Jersey Shore the first American show in many, many, many years that basically says to the audience, look at how funny these people are in terms of their ethnicity? Now, no one is saying that, right?
No one's saying it, but they, for some reason, they've been able to put a show on the air that allows us to just look at how I'm trying to find the right word. It allows us to look at just how greasy. I don't know how else to... You know,
well, how about how Italian?
Well, how Italian, but just how oily, and but it's fun. I don't mean it in a derogatory way. I mean it in a way that is a flattering thing. Now, I had to fire two very good workers, two Italian Americans, because of the fact that these two people objected to me insisting they watch this show. I need them to watch this show because I need for my employees to connect with my restaurant workers, my employees to connect with my customers. And I had to can them.
And they're both Italians.
They're Italian American. That's tough. That hurts. But when I tell somebody to sit down and watch a show, and they say to me, well, I'm an Italian-American, I find it offensive, and I say to them, that's really not what this is about. I need for you to watch it and understand you may find it offensive, but I got people coming in here all the time that think it's a riot, and I need for you to connect to that. That's a very difficult thing.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking to Ted Bell here from Ted's of Beverly Hills about the TV show Jersey Shore and why that show is a hit. And we also have Vernon Dozier coming up next hour. Why that show is a hit, and it's basically because it's the first time in a long time that we're allowed to laugh at an ethnic stereotype, which is the Italian-American. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. It's the Phil Henry Show.
What up, man?
Beverly Hills tonight, we have our slow-roasted prime rib, the baseball steaks. I think we're out of the ribs. We're out of the St. Louis beef ribs.
All right, we'll take a moment. Were these two employees good at what they did? We're talking to Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills here about the firing of two employees because they didn't watch Jersey Shore.
No, hold on. You've got a sarcastic sound to you there.
Yeah, I have the only reason why I'm sounding sarcastic is firing people because they don't watch a TV show.
It's part of what we do here at Ted's of Beverly Hills. It's part of what we do here at Ted's of Beverly Hills. It's part of how I relate... keep my wait staff relating to the customer. I know many of the people listening to your program don't know Jersey Shore, but it's a very big show. And even though it is a program about Italian Americans, and these two Italian waitresses objected to it.
And they're American waitresses of Italian descent?
That is correct, yeah. I still had to have them watch it. And I asked them to watch this program on a weekly basis because their shifts were in the daytime. And they came back after the second show and said, no, we can't watch it. We don't want to see all of this Italian-American, all of these stereotypes. And I had to let them go. And they were very, very good at their job. They had an awful lot of people who liked them. And
at what point, then, you fired them. They were good at their job. At what point does that not make sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense because they didn't do what I asked them to do. The bottom line, Phil, in any job is you got to have people to do what you ask them to do. And if they don't, then you're out of luck. If they don't do what you ask them to do, I don't care how good they are. I'm Kent Bell. See? And I built this restaurant up to the point where it is today. A big-time restaurant in Beverly Hills, California, making a lot of money and doing what I do.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, talking to Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills about the TV show Jersey Shore and the need for your employees to watch it because it's the hippest and cool. What makes this show hip and cool? Because it's Italians?
Because it is Italian-Americans that you are allowed to laugh at. Look, Bill.
When you say we're allowed to laugh at them, what do you mean?
Well, because they're funny. I mean, there's nobody that is hiding. No one's hiding the fact that they're Italians. Okay.
Well, there were people, though, when this show first went on the air who said that it was a bit of an offensive stereotype to see these folks, right?
Yeah, well, there were. There were very, very small groups of Italian-Americans out there. But for the most part, because Italian-Americans is just one part of the community, everyone liked this show because you were able to look at these, you know, Italians, and they were hysterical with their chains, you know, and their bar fights, and they're sleeping with all kinds of, and I'm not saying that that's typical of Italian-Americans, but you had an opportunity then to look at an ethnic group and to laugh. Now, the last time, as I said, was good times. There was another one called Chico and the Man where you could laugh at Puerto Ricans, but for the most part, you're not allowed to laugh at someone's ethnicity, so it was refreshing. And that's why I told my waiters and my waitstaff, let's watch this show. Now, the economy is tough. We need to get people into the restaurant.
You know, you got a real weird way of attracting customers, if you don't mind me saying, Ted.
What do you mean?
I got to get my waiters up to speed on a TV show so that we have customers coming in so that the economy's bad, but I don't understand that. How about just good old-fashioned food, you know?
We've got great food.
I know, so why not just do that instead of, hey, make sure you watch this TV show, too?
Well, we do, you know, but the point that I'm trying to make is that you've always give yourself the edge. And I like this show, Jersey Shore. I like it a lot. It relaxes me. I can sit and I can look at these greasy... Boy, I can't say it, can I?
I'd rather you not, no. Do you have a... Why is it about... What is it about Italians you like to laugh at?
Well, I know there's something about Italians I want to laugh at, but I mean, you know, anytime you have the chance to say, look at it, you know, use the word Guinea...
All right. You can use it when you're watching the show, not here, all right?
All right, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Is that some kind of a pressure release for you?
It is a little bit. It is a little bit, yes. Because when I was coming up in the business, we had... How do I say this? When I was coming up in the restaurant business, we had certain kinds of people that tried to put the muscle on my father. Now, I'm not going to make any... comment.
Well, are you talking about organized crime?
I'm not going to make any comment.
All right. And what?
We had certain people that tried to put the arm on my father, and my father was fortunate enough through some of the contacts and connections that he had that he was able to keep them at bay. But ever since then, deep down, because I was a young man, but I was in the restaurant at the time, I've always wanted to be able to, I don't know, vent.
Well, Ted, what you're telling me is that these guys that put the arm on your father...
I'm not commenting on that. I would rather that you not.
All right, but you're drawing a clear connection, right?
Yes.
So what happened?
What happened was the following thing. I said, let's watch this Jersey Shore because these are the people that put the muscle on my father.
Italians.
I didn't say that.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. It is Catherine in Jersey City, New Jersey, listening on WWRL. Catherine, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
In regards to this gentleman.
Yes, ma'am.
If he ran a movie house and they were going to be showing pornography or films similar to that, he would not have the right to order his employees to watch pornography if they didn't. In fact, they could walk out.
I believe I would. I believe I would. And I'll tell you.
If I run a porn house. Excuse me, you're interrupting me.
Hold on for a minute.
Who? Which one of us?
Well, I tell you what. Are we going to a break? We are. So why don't you hold on, Catherine? We have to take a break. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show, 877-876. Are we going to a break? Yes, we are. 877-876. Phil, we'll be right back.
Phil Henry. World-famous Bill Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills on the Bill Hendry Show here. This portion of the Bill Hendry Show brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills as we continue discussing the TV show Jersey Shore and two waitresses that are fired.
Two waitresses you fired, huh?
Well, it's not about that.
All right, let me get back to the caller because we had Catherine hanging on to that break, and we appreciate that. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. You're on with Ted Bell. We're talking about Jersey Shore and the fact, Ted, and I think, Catherine, you brought this up. You wanted your wait staff to watch this TV show. They refused, and you fired them.
Right, but I wasn't asking them to watch porn like this lady said.
No, she didn't say that. Go ahead, Catherine.
As far as the Jersey show, sure. And the Akamam, these are shows wherein the individuals act stupid and idiotic. And that's where the laughing comes from. It is not necessarily due to the ethnicity. And you said that those two waitresses were very good workers.
They were, but something funny about Italians when they start going on with the hey, you know what I mean? That's what I said to them.
No. No matter what ethnicity it is, that is stupid, the way they're behaving. As you said, getting into bar fights, falling down drunk, that is idiotic. And people who watch that do not have much culture. They like to see other people making fools of themselves.
When my father had it, a couple of these guys put their arm on my dad. And
all right, but you're talking about organized crime here, right?
Yeah.
I'm not.
But you don't... No, I'm talking to Ted, though. He says that his father was muscled by, you know...
Right, and so I'm just saying to Catherine, it's relaxing for me to see a couple of Italians act stupid and fall in the gutter. Now, what I said to the waitresses... were very good, probably my two best waitresses, without question. One of them worked in the prime rib room, and the other was in our main dining room. And I said, you know what, you are two of the best I've ever had, you're fired. I had to say that because they wouldn't watch Jersey Shore. Do you know how stupid I felt doing that?
Well,
very
look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Who's watching Jersey Shore?
Yes.
You're the
I'm
one
the
that's
one.
Watching
I'm...
Jersey Shore, okay? Praising
I'm
your
the
stupid
one.
Actions. You're the one that's getting a laugh out of the stupid actions.
Right. I'm the one that had to fire them. You're right.
And
but I had to fire them because they wouldn't watch me.
They would have
they
the
are.
Right to sue you. They would have the right to take you to court.
Why? Because I told them they had to watch a show that my people that come to my restaurant
it
watch?
Was not,
no, no.
It was not connected to their job. They were doing their job. They knew how to do their job. Watching
that's
a stupid
absolutely.
Show is not necessary for the betterment of your customers. Your customers were getting good service. Your customers were getting good service.
No, they weren't. They were getting great service, but they were not getting conversation about Jersey Shore, which is what they wanted to talk about.
Well, wait a minute. Are you telling me the customers...
I'm telling you, I've got a lot of show business people. And when a waitress comes up and she's doing her job, hey, what about Jersey Shore? And then she looks back at them with that bulkhead stare... I can't, you know, I gotta fire her.
So she's doing everything right, except she didn't know about Jersey Shore. She's fired.
Yes, unfortunately. And did I feel like an ass? Yes, I did.
You should
did I have to
mirror.
Fire her? I do look in the mirror and I say, you're the guy that had to fire those women. And it wasn't pretty. and it hurt. It hurt bad. But they're on the bricks. It's their own fault.
Well,
it's
you know,
fault.
That's
yeah. Well, it's I hope they're fault. Listening yeah, and they take you to court.
All right. Thank you very much, Catherine. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, talking about the TV show Jersey Shore, some sort of television. This is a mandatory viewing of this show on the part of your staff.
That's correct, yes.
Have you had any problems with anybody else?
No, no, because the rest of the staff saw what happened to Katarina is the name of one of the girls, and Janelle was the other girl. Now, they saw what happened, and both of those girls were Italian-American, but that didn't make any difference. I didn't fire them because they're Italian. I fired them because they had the problem with the show. And I don't see it. Now, understand that I am sensitive to the cultural and racial differences of all of my employees. We are EOE right down the line. We adhere to California state law and federal law. Okay, enough said. However, if a television show comes along that shows Italian Americans in a hysterically funny light, and I don't mean in a negative, and it just so happens that in my past, my father was muscled by some big, you know, and you don't want me to say it,
big Italian, you say an Italian mobsters.
Right. And I have the opportunity in the restaurant for the very first time in 33 years to use an Italian slur. Naturally, I'm going to want to take advantage of that. Now,
this isn't anything that a customer is going to understand, let alone one of your employees, that you have a personal...
You're going to say, I don't have a personal problem, Phil.
Well, you don't think you have a personal problem that you want all of your employees to watch this show about Italian Americans, that's what you think it's about, because it makes them look funny, and because the Italian waitresses didn't want to watch it, and you get to use Italian slurs? Is that what you said?
Hold on for a minute, Phil.
No, didn't you say that you get to use in the restaurant?
Yes, I do. I use them not in front of the customers, in front of the employees. I use them in front of the employees. I do not use them in front of the customers. And the employees have no say in it because it's on TV. So if I come out of the office and I've been watching Jersey Shore and I go, hey, you know, and if I could use one of the words, you greaseball and you guinea and that kind of thing. And one of them complains, I can say, no, it was just on television. So that's number two. And then finally, number three is the fact that the program is very, very popular. And so many people in the entertainment business watch it, and so I have to have my wait staff up on it. When these two ladies said they refused to watch it, and I tried to make light of it, I said, well, then you two guineas, you know, whatever, get out of here. And I gave them a...
Boy, that's a very, very nice thing to do, Ted.
I was kidding, and they knew it, and I gave them their severance, and I gave them notice pay. They were very well taken care of.
That's a nice thing to do, though. With two people you're putting on the street, you two guineas.
I didn't say it in a way that was hostile, and I didn't say it in a way that was the least bit demeaning. I said it in a way that I think was very, very positive. Anyway, you know, that's what, and we'd like to invite people down here tonight. We are having a special football night just ahead of the weekend, and it's going to be a popular thing every week. We do this. It'll be a very popular thing tomorrow and on Sunday, and we hope that people will come down.
So what about Jersey Shore? Are you still demanding that people watch it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I haven't had to fire anybody because everyone's watching it.
And you're still using these Italian slurs?
In the way. Oh, boy.
I know. In the kitchen.
In the kitchen with the waitstaff, yes.
All right. Ted Bell, folks. 877-876-PHIL. Next hour, we got Vernon Dozier coming up about planned wills and living trusts and all that stuff. Next hour, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb, paging Dr. Green Thumb.
time for the Dr. Green Thumb Report here tonight on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Dateline, Palm Springs, California. Mark Wahlberg has explained that his children prompted him to stop smoking marijuana. Ain't that great? E! Online reports that while accepting Variety's Indie Impact Award at the Palm Springs International Film Festival, Wahlberg joked that the statuette resembled a bong before adding that he doesn't use anymore. Wahlberg continued at the Hotel Parker Palm Springs, "I stopped smoking weed for my kids. One day we were driving, you could smell it from somewhere. My daughter asked what the smell was. I told her it was a skunk. Then she said, sometimes daddy smells like that to me and to my wife, so I knew that I had to take a bath." No, he said, so I knew I had to stop smoking dope. Chuck Norris's marijuana hits L.A. That's not Chuck Norris's marijuana. It's called Chuck Norris marijuana. Much like Tom Cruise a few years ago, Chuck Norris has become the latest celebrity with the dubious honor of having a new strain of weed named after him. Back in April 08, lawyers for Tom Cruise became concerned over licensed cannabis clubs in Northern California selling a strain of marijuana called Tom Cruise Purple. It reportedly featured a picture of Tom Cruise on the front laughing hysterically. That'd be fun. Well, I think it's funny anyway. Anyway, said one weed connoisseur, "I heard it's the kind of pot that makes you hallucinate." Okay, indeed, the new Chuck Norris Black and Blue Dream is described as having quite the kick. A picture of Cruise laughing. Anyway, when TMZ contacted a rep for the 70-year-old actor, that would be Chuck Norris, the rep replied that the product is definitely not authorized. Well, do you think? Anyway, it's unclear whether any legal means will be taken to stop the cannabis clubs from selling the new strain. The Tom Cruise strain is still available. Well, if it's legally sold in a medical marijuana dispensary, yeah, they could sue. It's called, Said lawyer Lisa Bloom in 2008, you know, if his lawyer sues over this, I'm going to wonder what they've been smoking. Nobody really thinks that Tom Cruise is endorsing this particular kind of marijuana. Why don't celebrities occasionally just laugh at things? This is obviously supposed to be a joke. That's a picture of him laughing on it. He's clearly not making any money off of it. He's not endorsing it. I say, just let it go. That's great, Lisa. Well, but you know, the other thing is, they are making money using his picture, so that's worth some dough. All right, are we still on, is that it, man? I thought we had another one. Oh, here's another story. Maine police seize rolling marijuana nursery. Police in Wellville, Maine say they've never seen anything like the portable marijuana nursery they seized from two men pushing it down the street. Police officers investigated after receiving a report on Tuesday of two men pushing what appears to be a huge toolbox down the street that was making a lot of noise. Police Chief Joseph Massey says it turned out to be a self-contained marijuana growing unit with with lights, a fan, watering system inside, and all kinds of stuff. So they were just rolling this thing down the street. Massey says the Morning Sentinel Massey told the Morning Sentinel newspaper police found marijuana residue in the box, which is 4.5 feet long, 2 feet wide, 4 feet tall. Police say 34-year-old Justin Leibowitz was charged with possession of drug paraphernalia. And finally, in Marin County, Florida, a Marin County jail officer is accused of smuggling weed into the county jail by hiding it inside a submarine sandwich. According to sheriff's deputies, Joseph Jones was smuggling the marijuana for an inmate who promised to give him a bottle of tequila. What kind of a loser? I mean, what are you guys paying those guys? You give me a bottle of tequila, I'll smuggle dope for you? I mean, they don't get... Anyway, according to deputies, two of the inmates' friends would in turn buy the sandwiches and smoke the weed in them. That sounds good to me. What a deal. The Subway sandwich teriyaki chicken thang had 8 grams of green leafy substance, which later tested positive as oregano. No, it was marijuana. Jones was supposed to give the marijuana-laced sub to the inmate, but was caught Wednesday. It is not yet known what led to the officer getting caught. How about he's an alcoholic? It sounds like that to me. There it is, man. That's our Green Thumb Report for tonight. Vernon Dozier coming up later on, and he'll be talking as a baby boomer about estate planning and all kinds of stuff. Apparently, he is convinced that this generation of boomers, they're too young to die. And so he's not necessarily going to be doing any estate planning. We'll talk with him about that coming up in a few minutes here. Our number, 877-876-7445 here on the Phil Henry Show. And, of course, our website is philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. We have a new piece of, by the way, paraphernalia. I mean,
can't say paraphernalia.
I understand. A new piece of merchandise that we're rolling out. very, very soon, man. Some guy today or yesterday or the day before, there's a gentleman who they grabbed a hold of him and they ain't letting go of this guy. He was a shooting victim in Tucson. His name is Eric Fuller. And when they got a hold of this guy, that is the individuals who are doing what President Obama said not to do, which is essentially continue the rhetoric and blame people for this thing. They got a hold of this guy, and man, they are milking this for all it's worth. And when I say they, I mean, I think I saw Ed Schultz talking about it. I saw Oberfuhrer talking about it. I think I heard Fat Ass talking. I know I heard Fat Ass talking about it. So there was Walsh. There was Punk Face, there was Fat Ass, and there was Oberfuhrer. All four of them, and Butch.
Butch? Who's Butch?
Who do you think? In any event, Arizona shooting victim Eric Fuller blames Palin, Glenn Beck, and others. Perfect. A wounded survivor of the Tucson shooting, the critically injured Representative Gabrielle Giffords is blaming Sarah Palin, House Speaker John Boehner, Fox TV host Glenn Beck, former Nevada GOP Senate candidate Sharon Angle, Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, Abraham Lincoln, and all of the above for the shooting. Mr. Fuller said, it looks like Palin, Beck, Angle, and the rest got their first target. He said that in an interview with our dear friend. Is that woman Amy Goodman on Democracy Now? Is that who that is?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, she's a pain in the... He went on to place blame on House Majority Leader John Boehner, Jesse Kelly. Oh, boy, you name it. There isn't anybody that he didn't think of. Fuller, a 63-year-old veteran, which makes it even better. See, what you want to do, and this is how ridiculous the argument has gotten, is the following thing. Were you in the military? No. Well, then you can't talk about it. So you got to run out and get your military guy to speak on your behalf. He's a veteran, so you can't. And I even saw Oberman with a purely predictable and just utterly cliche line, I believe that morally he has the right. He's a 63-year-old veteran. He campaigned for Giffords during her reelection and was at the supermarket for the Congress on Your Corner event. He was shot in the knee and in the back in the tragedy that left 6 people dead and 13 wounded. I was in shock, and I just wandered out into the parking lot, Fuller said, and a woman was pushing a cart full of groceries out there, and I said to her, I've been shot, and she looked at me like I was crazy. I think she was a Republican. He didn't say that. I just... Earlier this week, in an interview with CBS News, Fuller didn't go as far to point figures and said he called the shooter, Jared Loudner, a madman. I hadn't ever had any trauma experience at that level before, he told CBS, and I didn't quite know how to react. I felt like we were in for more and possibly to be given a coup de grace by this madman that was so vigorously exercising his Second Amendment rights. No, he wasn't. With all due respect, Mr. Fuller, you're a veteran. You sound like an imbecile, which is not the first time I've called a veteran an imbecile. I think I called my dad an imbecile once. He's a veteran. And I'm pretty sure I called my brother an imbecile once, and he's a veteran.
You're kidding me. You told your dad?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I yelled at my dad, called him an idiot, and all kinds of stuff. And my brother, too. And both of those guys are veterans. So, and now this cat says that this guy Lautner was exercising his Second Amendment rights.
Well, why? Yeah, he was. Why do you say it wasn't?
There's nothing in the Second Amendment that says you get to go out and just shoot anybody you want, man. You realize that?
Yeah, don't you know how to read it?
Yeah, I know how to read it. I'm just asking him okay, so what are you saying?
What am I saying? There's nothing about what this guy was doing that had anything to do with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says that we have the right to bear arms. The Second Amendment says... people have the right to bear arms to protect themselves. I don't know what the exact wording is, but you can look it up. It doesn't say take a gun and go out and start blasting on people. So that was also not a very bright thing for that man to say. However, while he was recovering in the hospital from a gunshot wound to his knee and his back, Eric Fuller wrote down some thoughts about the tragedy, which he shared with Democracy Now!
And the first thing that I wrote down and what my reaction was to it was... how many other demented people are out there? It looks like Palin, Beck, Sharon Angle, and the rest got their first target. Their wish for Second Amendment activism has been fulfilled. Senseless hatred leading to murder, lunatic fringe anarchism subscribed to by John Boehner, mainstream rebels with vengeance for all, even 9-year-old girls. There was a little girl named Christina Green, 9 years old.
it was one of the deceased.
I got to tell you, man, somebody should look into this guy because it's too pat.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's too pat. It's just too pat. Either he's not a veteran or he is a veteran and somebody was feeding him. And when I mean feeding him lines. Or it's just too pat. Or maybe he was a veteran. Or maybe it's all as it seems. And he's an idiot. Fuller also blames Representative Gifford's congressional opponent, Jesse Kelly. Oh, okay.
Another thing I wrote down was, can we have another fundraiser at the target range? Jesse Kelly. Jesse Kelly ran against her in the election. And I've heard him speak a couple of times. And I couldn't believe he was a real candidate. I thought he was just like a fake candidate. It doesn't seem like anybody would consider him seriously. He came within 4,000 votes of winning the election. His one of his slogans was, shoot a fully automatic M16 with Jesse Kelly. Kind of a very marginal personality and a low mentality.
There you go. We'll be back with Vernon Dozier, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Still okay?
No, we're not going to have babies. We're not going to have sex.
January 12 at 1:56.
We get Alexis eyebrows waxed, number one, because she has a little unibrow.
Who's going to hell this bitch?
That's hatred, man.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows would not dare go. Sometimes it hurts, but we got to go there. 877-876-7445 is the number. 877-876-7445. And we're going to be talking here with Vernon Dozier in just a moment about the baby boomers and what they're looking at. You know, we're hearing all about the Social Security this and retirement that. And Mr. Dozier is a high school teacher at Belmar Academy. He is a member of the board there. He's a high school football coach. He's a boomer, and he's going to talk to us about how he's dealing with the eventual retirement thing here in just a moment. 877-876-7445. PhilHenryShow.com is our website. We can go and get live streaming video of the show right now as we speak, as well as live streaming audio on our video feed. You can hear the archives, and we've got thousands of hours of those. We've got podcasts every day of the show, and the video cast, probably the best part of everything, is available to you right now. And if you ever want to see, some nights Phil Henry is that, you know, just the color of my face alone is probably worth it. So PhilHenryShow.com for all of your video cast needs. And Mr. Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale, California. Mr. Dozier, how are you?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you.
You know, when we talk, you're a high school teacher. How many years away are you from retirement?
I'm 12 years.
12 years away, so you're 53?
53, that's correct.
And when we talk about the baby boomers, and you did a piece in one of the blogs that the National Teachers Association has on growing older and what you're doing to prepare for it. You had a very interesting point of view. What was that?
Well, my point of view is simply this, that I am not going right now, and I don't think anybody should. I'm not going to adhere to or listen to. I'm not going to be stampeded by the different companies and different agencies and these different groups of people who want us to get ready to retire. I mean, I'm looking or to get sick. Every day I'm looking on a TV at a television ad for a Hoveround, if you've seen this commercial.
And right, I've seen that, and we're not knocking the product, right?
No, I'm not knocking the product, but I am saying that I'm not. I think it is a. I think they line up and they try to beat you into submission with these products like Hoveround, or they try to beat you into submission with the medical insurance that you need, or the be this, or a walk-in bathtub. And then you have living wills, you've got living trusts, you've got estate planning. And all of this, you're told, as a baby boomer, as somebody approaching retirement, all of this stuff you better get prepared to do because that's what you're supposed to do. Well, I said to the in the blog that I wrote, and I've talked to different groups of parents, as well as other people who are teachers, other professionals, I said, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not estate planning. I'm not getting my will ready. I'm sure as hell not going to buy a hold around, even though I don't need one.
Well, that's something that you would only buy if you needed it, right?
That's correct. But I'm not looking into AARP or discounts or anything like this, because what that does is it feeds a mindset, and it feeds the mindset of age. And when you start to do all these things, planning for these retirements and so forth, you begin to get old. Now, that's one part of it. But the bigger part, I think, is your relatives, your kids, the family members around you. When you start preparing your will, or you start preparing your estate, or any of that, you are, I don't think you're doing anybody any favors. What you're doing is you're making your family, you give them incentive to become overly interested in your personal effects. And I would rather just not do any estate planning, not do any will, not do anything, and let those people fend for themselves. Now, here's what I mean, Phil.
Well, hold on for a minute. I just want to ask you, are you saying you're not doing any estate planning, or you're not letting them know whether you're doing estate planning?
I'm not doing any estate planning.
Are you not preparing a will?
I'm not preparing a will at all, no.
Do you not plan on preparing a will?
I will plan a will when I'm ready to die. I'm going to get every second, every minute out of this life, and I'm not going to prepare any will. I'm not going to prepare any estate. I'm not going to put anything down in any document as to where things go until I've lived every single solitary second of my life. And that's what I said in the blog, and I've had a lot of mail from people, a lot of emails from people telling me that they used to sit down with their lawyer and they had all of this planned out.
Now, there's going to be a lot of people that don't think it's responsible of you.
Well, what's irresponsible of it?
That you have all of these effects. You have you have all of your stuff.
Yeah.
And you're not leaving it to anybody.
I'll leave it to people when I'm ready to leave it to people. But I'm not going to sit down and do estate planning. And as a matter of fact, I'd rather die and have all of my effects go to the state of California than sit down and plan my will because someone tells me I should. I'm a baby boomer, and that means I come from a generation of people that think a little bit differently. Now, I'm not going to hang my hat on that, but I'm not going to put down on the paper anything until I'm ready to do it, and I may never be ready to do it. I'm giving that advice to everybody that I know who is getting ready to retire.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. You're saying don't prepare a will.
No, don't do any of it.
Don't prepare a will. Don't no estate. Nothing.
Nothing.
What if you're married?
What if you're married? Your wife should understand that if you die, it's all going to the state. She should be ready for.
Whoa! Wait a minute. See, that's. I don't know. I mean, it's one thing, and I can almost agree with you. It's one thing if I don't leave it to my kids or my grandkids. That's probably not a very nice thing to do. But my wife, don't you want to make sure that she's taken care of?
I love my wife very much, and I've been married twice. And I love my first wife, I love my second wife, but I don't love them so much that I'm going to rob myself of life planning on dying. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
If you're making out a will, if you're making out a trust, if you're making out an estate, you're planning on death. I'm not going to plan on death. I'm planning on life. And if that means I die and everything goes to the state of California or my wife doesn't get a thing, then she knows what the game is.
Does she have any chance at getting any of this stuff?
There's a slight chance, and it's a window of opportunity. When I am done living, and I've decided that I'll be dying any day now, that's when I'll do my documents, that's when I'll do my will.
And when is that?
I don't know.
You just know that a day will come that you'll decide you're going to die.
That's exactly right. I'm telling you.
And you're gonna do your will?
I'll do my will then, yes. But until then, I'm not doing anything. And if I die before that, then they're going to have to take all of the things that I own and turn them over to the state of California.
And you're all right with that?
I'm totally all right with that. And here's why. I don't want to be robbed of life. Too many of us are robbed of life worrying about our will. You have relatives that are hanging around you, and they take on the countenance of almost this, you know, the stereotype. They take on the countenance of a buzzard, almost, hanging around waiting for you to die. And I've told my kids and I told my wife, I said, you might as well give it up. You're not going to be hanging over my bed waiting for me to die, because I haven't made out a will. I don't have a trust. I don't have any estate planning. And you better hope and pray that I've squeezed all the life I wanted to squeeze out of this life. Then and only then will I make out my will.
Are you recommending this for every retiring person?
I am. Yes, I am, Phil.
How does someone know that they've squeezed all there is to squeeze out of life?
When you've done everything you wanted to do, when you feel that you have, and I think it's almost like, I can't put it to you in the way that I want to put it, but it's almost as if you spent a whole week, excuse me for saying this, you spent a whole week in a cat house, if you will. You have had every woman in it. At the end of the week, you pretty much know that you're done.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm talking about.
So we'll just know that we're done with life, and that's when we plan our will?
That's when you plan your will, that's when you plan your estate, and that's when you put those papers with your attorney or whoever. But before that, you don't. And that keeps your family from hanging around, rubbing their hands together like buzzards, waiting to get your money. It also keeps your wife from doing that. And as much as I love my wife, I'm a good deal older than her, so I'm not under any illusion. She's waiting for me to die. I don't think she wants me to. But I think she also knows that once I do die, she stands to inherit a great deal of money. Well, no, she doesn't, because I'm not putting that down into a will or anything until I'm ready to go. And I feel comfortable with that, Phil.
How does a family react to that? Have you had reaction from your kids?
I have.
What have they said?
Well, they look at you like you are selfish. They look at you like you're doing the wrong thing. They look at you, and I gathered them around, and I said, don't give me that, because you know that you're hanging around waiting to get your hands on what I've got. I said, and you ain't going to get your hands on it until I've, as I said to them, until I've squeezed every last nanosecond out of this life. And then we'll sit down and talk about it. And you better hope I got enough life left in me to get everything done. Otherwise, I'm going to die, and it'll just all be undone. It'll just be something for the state of California to work out.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you doing this? Why would you... why would you not plan properly for the disbursement of your retirement, your estate, your will? Why would you wait until the very last second, until you've absolutely squeezed every second out of life, and then do it?
Because I believe, Phil, that relatives and your loved ones are people that not only lift you up, but at a certain point they begin to drag you down. I think your wife, your kids, their love carries you along, but it only carries you along to a certain point, and then there begins a process of degrading. It isn't because they don't love you, but they become almost like anchors, and they start dragging you down deeper and deeper and deeper. It's almost as if they're digging the hole, and they're going to kick your body into it. And so by estate planning and coming up with a will, you're helping them bury you. You're digging the hole, and you're hastening the day that once you get the will done and the estate done, they'll kick your body and roll it into the hole. I won't let them do it. I'm going to keep that day as far away from me as I can, so that as their love has begun to degrade and is beginning to turn into greed, and they're hanging around not so much to try to get me something to drink or maybe the channel changer or something to read, but they're hanging around waiting for me to just all of a sudden go out. I'm telling them it ain't going to do you any good.
Well, so this is about relatives.
Oh, yeah. Totally about relatives.
It's about your relatives who are waiting around for you to die to get your stuff, and you don't want them to have it.
I don't want them to have it until I want them to have it. Do you understand? And that's why I think it's good for anybody listening to you right now, listening to me right now, Phil, or my age. You don't want people to have what you've got until you're ready to give it to them. And if they're hanging around rubbing their hands together, and you see kind of a hunchback, because you get that kind of hunched back almost like a buzzard, and the neck, you know what I mean?
No, I don't. But the picture you're painting...
I'm telling you that that's what they look like.
The picture you're painting is of a greedy... is of a family that is trying to get a loved one to die, and I don't know that that's always the case, you know?
Well, believe me when I tell you, there comes a time when every relative wants the old man or the old lady to just go ahead and stop breathing so they can set about the business of dividing up what's out in the living room, which is what that's where they put it anyway. While you're dying, they've dragged all of your personal effects into the living room, and they're already picking through it.
All right, our number, I'm going to hold on for just a second, Vernon. We're going to take a break here. Our number is 877-876-7445, estate planning. Don't write a will. Don't do a living estate. Don't do anything with your stuff while you're alive, because that just encourages your loved ones to wait for you to croak. Even if you, I don't know. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Show, Vernon Dozier, who is a high school educator, a member of the board at Belmar Academy, a high school varsity football coach, and approaching retirement like so many people. Talking about a blog that he did for a teacher's website, the NEA website, in which he wrote that he is not going to be writing a will, he's not going to be estate planning, he's not going to be doing anything with his assets in terms of the disbursement of those assets after he dies until he is ready to die. Now, you said something, I want to get to some phone calls, but you said that there comes a point where the love of a family begins to degrade into avarice or greed?
That is correct, yes.
Is there a date? I mean, not a date. Is there an age?
Well, Phil, I can tell you that as a father, and I've got children and grandchildren, that they love me, love me, love me. There comes a point around your 65th, your 70th birthday, where the love begins to slide downhill. And now it's no longer love. It's what I call they're waiting on you. They are getting you everything you need, and they want you to be comfortable. Yes, they want you to be comfortable. Because it's less of a mess when you eventually die. And
oh, no. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is I'm not saying anything. They're not going to have to find you anywhere. They know where you are. And once you die, now comes a time when your personal effects, your estate, is not divided up. Now, I'm saying to everyone listening who is of my age, don't do it. Don't do it. You tell them that you'll get around to estate planning and writing your will when you're good and ready, and not a second before that. And in the meantime, you may take a trip to Italy. You may get yourself a girlfriend. You may drive a sports car at 150 miles an hour. You may drive. You may go. You may take up skydiving. And let me tell you something, because I've seen this happen. You're going to see a lot of family members come riding out there to the airfield in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning trying to talk you out of jumping out of an airplane. Do you think they care about you dying? They care about you dying because you ain't written your will yet. I saw that happen to a gentleman by the name of Jerry Sompen, who went out, he wanted to take up skydiving. Well, he had about 15 members of his family out there sweating buckets.
Why? Because he hadn't written a will?
Because he hadn't written a will.
Not because they loved him, or...
No, are you kidding? Are you kidding? I got to let a lot of people know out there, a lot of elderly people. Yes, your family loves you, but they don't love you that much. They're waiting for you to go so they can divide that stuff up. Now, if you haven't divided it up yet, they don't want you to go. They don't want to see anything happen to you. And here's Jerry having the time of his life, jumping out of an airplane. He's got 20 members of his family sitting out there on this airstrip, And I am telling you, as God is my witness, they were sweating buckets, thinking that that this guy was going to hit the ground, and the only thing they'd find would be a pair of shoes, a helmet. You know, whatever you want to call it, disintegrate or something.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Talking here with Vernon Dozier about retirement and estate planning. Here's Michael in Jackson, Mississippi. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you. Now, Vernon, it sounds to me like maybe you don't love your family enough to let them enjoy the things that you've worked for. Why in the world would you want the state of California to misuse the things that you've earned your whole life?
Well, I would tell you this, Michael. I would rather the state of California have it than my son or my daughter, who are standing there rubbing their hands together like something out of a Oliver Twist, waiting for me to strangle on my own spit. See? So, you know what I'm saying? So, in other words, do you want your kids hanging over your deathbed waiting to see that respirator go down to zero? No. You don't.
Well, the gentleman's question's a good one. You love your kids, right?
Of course I love my kids.
Well, it sounds like you would rather your money go to the cold hands of the state of California's central fund.
No, that's not the case, Phil. But I would rather it go to California than try to enjoy my life while my family's standing over me waiting for me to die. That's the point that I'm making.
Why not set it up then to some charity that your kids have nothing to do with?
I don't care.
It sounds to me like the only person you care about is yourself.
I want to have fun.
All right, 877-876-7445. Back with Vernon Dozier tomorrow on the Phil Hendry Show.
I got to have kicks.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Tell me that story, because my audience will find that interesting. We're talking here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy on when to make out your living will or your will or your trust or your estate planning. And he said that far too many of the baby boomers are making it out way too early, and it only causes the family to suddenly become almost ghoulish. You know, Vernon?
It really is, Phil. I wouldn't want to use that word, but I think it's accurate. They do become very ghoulish. They hang over you like almost as if they're a buzzard or something in a tree.
Tell the story very quickly, and I want to go to some phone calls about this pilot you were talking about.
Well, this is a very famous story. Jim Jacoby was an Air Force pilot, and in his retirement, he decided to take up a jet at the time, and it was an F-15. And his family came out to the airfield with him. It turned out that he was in a very, very vicious storm, and he had to bail out when there was a malfunction. Now, he was in the air because he bailed out at a very high altitude for some 45 minutes. The family had been alerted to the fact that the jet had crashed. And all of a sudden, a family that was petrified that he would die was faced with the reality that he was what they thought was dead. And he wasn't. He bailed out. But they found out, because the attorney showed up at the airfield, that he had made out the will and he had done his living estate. So all of a sudden, all these people that were sweating bullets that he was going to die, they all got into their cars and were gone from the airfield by the time he came down in his chute. Some 45 minutes later, walked out to the airfield to see where they were. All he saw were tire tracks. They're at the attorney's office dividing up this man's estate, and he's walking around alive.
Good God Almighty.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So they, when the jet crashed, and then they find out that the guy, his estate's all done.
Yeah, they're over there already trying to probate this thing. I mean, it's hit the hair on some people. That's why I told myself, no way. You know what? If that was me and that jet crashed, I'd want them in tears, because they'd say, oh, my God, he didn't do his will. Then I'd come walking up with the chute wrapped up under my arm, and I'd go, somebody got a problem? And they'd be kissing me up one side and down the next, and I'd say to them, I'm still not making out my will.
Unreal. All right, our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Here is Gene in Mobile, Alabama. Go ahead, Gene. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm kind of flabbergasted right now. I just cannot believe there's actually someone who's a teacher who is saying these things. I can't believe that. That's why I took my kids out of school. I'm 51, okay? I've got six kids. They're all terrific people, and I absolutely want them at my bedside when I die. And I hope when I die they are all there so I can tell them goodbye. And I don't think they care if I have $1 million or a dime. And this he needs
a
different family. You know, he picked the wrong family. You picked the wrong family. And you being a school teacher?
How can you pick the wrong family? I mean, the family that I have is the family I have. How can I pick the wrong family, ma'am?
If you think your kids are just going to stand around and wring their hands hoping for you to die, what is wrong with you?
Ma'am, what do you think your kids are going to do? You got some. You have some fantasy that your kids are going to be there. Oh, boo-hoo. Of course your kids love you.
Let me tell you.
Of course your kids love you.
But
when you die, your kids will make a beeline. Yeah, when you die, your family's going to beeline to the safety deposit box as sure as God made green apples.
You know what? I don't care if they do, because you know what? I'm going to be gone. I don't care if they do. I hope that I make a million.
Don't you want to enjoy all of your life?
You know what?
I hope I make
$6 million in my lifetime so that when I die, I can leave them $1 million apiece. You know what? That means they don't have to work like I did all my life.
You don't want to go out on a cruise and meet some young man. Yes, I said young man. You heard me.
I've been married 33 years. I am perfectly happy with the man I have.
And have the time of your life.
I'm already having the time of my life. I've got beautiful kids.
I want to ask you. If you
they have beautiful spouses. I have terrific grandkids. I'm happy.
Hear me.
As a dead hog in sunshine.
Well, what?
And I don't care if I make $1 million. It don't matter.
You're as happy as a dead hog in a sunshine.
I'm just as tickled pink as I can be.
Wait.
I think you're lying to me, and I'll tell you why. For you to admit that you don't want $6 million, well, you'd sound like a crazy woman. So naturally, you want to say you won't leave with your kids.
I don't want $6 million.
$6 million in your hands would be far better than $6 million in the ghoulish claws of your kids.
Well, wait. This lady wants to leave money to her family. So why? What makes if? And then we'll move on to another call. But what makes this woman in your mind, Vernon, if she wants to leave the money to her family? What's wrong with leaving the money to her family?
Because she's robbing herself of life. If she's got $6 million.
$6 million,
and she don't want to go out and spend that money herself. She wants to leave it to some ghoulish bloodsuckers.
Whoa! What do you mean ghoulish bloodsuckers?
Well, that's what your kids are. At the day they're standing around like the bloodsuckers they are. Forget it.
No, man. It again. Well, listen, Gene.
Gene says that she has the ability to earn $6 million. If she had the ability to earn $6 million, why doesn't she enjoy that $6 million herself instead of turning it over to the bloodsuckers?
I'm not telling you that I'm going to turn it over to my children as bloodsuckers, okay? What I'm telling you is this. There's no way I could spend $6 million in my lifetime. Okay,
you know,
so every
you
good
to this
parent.
Horse dung, oh, God.
Would
I
you
can't
let me speak, Vernon? You had
lady,
to say.
You know who Kim Cattrall
every
is,
good
don't
parent.
You? She has
every,
young men.
Wow. Wow. Let the lady
so
finish.
I'm telling
yourself,
you.
Buddy.
You.
I'm glad you're in California.
You know what, ma'am? I know how to
that
live. And I can tell you, $6 million.
All right, the lady wants to leave it to her kids. Listen, Gene, thank you very much for your call. 877-876-7445.
You almost called her Kim. I thought that was funny.
Why?
Because I said Kim Cattrall. You see, a woman that age, after she's sweated and bled for these kids, now they're standing over her bed like they're a bunch of crones out of some Dickens novel. and they're wringing their hands like bloodsuckers.
All right, well, you know, you're talking about somebody's family, Vernon. If that's the way your family is, I think you have every right to talk about them, and not necessarily about that woman. Jim in Sweetwater, Texas, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier.
Well, Phil, it sounds to me like he's doing exactly that, describing his family, because he certainly doesn't know what love in a family is. And
of course
I care about, if he doesn't care about providing for his wife when he passes on, then he's not even a man in my book. That's all I have to say. Have a good evening.
I do care.
You're an idiot.
Anyway, you're throwing your little hand grenade and running away. What a chicken.
877, well, do you want to respond anyway?
Well, I'll respond this way and say he didn't want to talk to me because he knew that what I was saying is making sense. Same thing with that lady didn't want to talk. She was talking over me because what I'm saying to these people, they know it's true. Go out and enjoy your life. Don't make up a will. Don't make up an estate. Don't do nothing until you've squeezed every last penny, every last drop of joy out of this life. And then you can say to your family, all right, is everybody ready? All right, bloodsuckers, line up to the left.
And what's with the bloodsucker thing?
Your family knows it's true. I'll say, all right, I've had all I want of this world, and frankly, I've had all I want of you. So what we're going to do now is line you all up, and here's what you get. And that's how I do it.
Yeah, do you blame people for thinking you don't love your family?
Yes, I do. They don't know what love is. Love is letting somebody be who they are. My family is going to jump for joy when they see me get out into a race car and do 200 miles an hour down the backstretch at Daytona, because that's what I've always wanted to do. I don't know if you know that or not, Phil. I'm a teacher. And I'm a history teacher and a football, but I've always wanted to get into one of those NASCAR stock cars, and I want to do 200 miles an hour down the backstretch. And if it gets airborne, like Fireball Roberts did that time, and if I get air and I sail up off the track and behind the track, so the car disappears, and then all you see is a ball of fire.
All right, I understand. God Almighty, you want to see your family? Your family witnessed that?
I want it. If that's what happens, my family will be happy for me, even as the money goes to the treasury of the state of California.
That's a waste, man.
Okay, man.
No, you know, it's a waste. You got your kicks, you got your jollies. What do you mean you get air and then you become a fireball? God, here is Terry in Tucson. Terry, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, if he got airborne in Daytona, you know, I'd like to see him get out of that car with his hair on fire. Because, you know, it's obviously nobody in his family loves him at all.
Are your teeth in? Just a question, are your teeth in? Because I can't do it tonight. I can't do it tonight. Are your teeth in, sir? Terry?
Yes, what's that? I didn't hear that.
Are your teeth in? Are your teeth in? Do you have your lower bridge in?
All right, what is your comment, Terry?
Well, yeah, you know, there's obviously no love in his family at all.
There's love in my family.
Every living relative he has.
No. Why do you say that?
Well,
because I want to retire.
You're talking about me. Well, tomorrow, you dummy. You ought to be horsewhipped.
Why? Why?
Because you're negative. You hate your family.
I don't hate my... Just because I don't do what you think I should do, which is to run right out and make a will and be a good little boy. No. I'm going to enjoy my life. I'm going to Daytona 500, and I'm going to run that thing right down the backstretch at about 200 miles an hour, and I'm going to slowly but surely lose it.
Well, good.
Okay?
Give me some of your money, you cheapskate.
Why would I give it to you? I'd rather give it to California than give it to you.
Yeah,
that's how much
sure.
I like you.
Where's all your relatives? Call your wife up.
You want to know something? I'd rather give my money to my ex-wife, who I hate, than give it to you. That's
well,
how much chance
then.
You got to get my money. I'm not giving it to you. I'd
You're
rather give it
dummy.
To her.
You ought to be taken
you
out of course.
Guys like you, you go the way everybody tells you to go your whole life. You never go your own way. You're always going the way they tell you to go. And you make out your will, and you got your living estate. You know what, Terry? You're going to die in a folding chair out on some piece of lawn that's dying. Some home, probably about five or six doors, all leading to the same kind of, you know, unit. And
well,
then they'll call you for dinner. That's where you're going. And your family's...
Good. I'll see you later.
Either that or Daytona 500. You know what? You're an idiot. Is he calling from Tucson? Wait a second. That's the guy.
Yeah, will you shut up? 877-876-PHIL. What do you mean, that's the guy?
That was Tucson, right?
That...
the point that he made and the point that I'm making is the following thing. The money that you're going to be, when you die and you have money and it's, you want it to go to the state of California, it could easily go to somebody who would use it for good, you know.
Who?
A family member, a loved one.
I understand that, but they're not getting it until I'm ready. When I'm ready, they're ready. And when they're ready, I'm ready.
But so you are at the Daytona 500. You lose control of the car. It flips up the back. It goes down. Fireball, the whole damn thing, right?
Right.
And where is your money?
I guess at that point, unless I've made my will out, I guess at that point, it goes to the state of California. But I'll tell you this. If I'm ready to take that big run down the backstretch of Daytona, I think I've pretty much squeezed all the life that I want to squeeze out of this existence, so I'm pretty sure I would have my will made out by then. I don't know.
Is there a chance that before you made that run down the backstretch of Daytona, you would not have your will made out?
There's a slight chance, but I don't think it's a big one. I think by the time that someone said to me, okay, Vernon, we got the green light for you to get into it, you know, I don't know what car it'd be. Jeff Gordon is going to let me use his Tide, Dodge, Super, whatever. And I head on down that backstretch, and now I feel I'm losing it. I can feel air, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah.
And so is it a suicide?
No.
All right, we'll be back with more. The more this guy talks, the more I think he doesn't really care. I don't even know if he's got any money. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Your will, your living trust. When should you make it out? Or should you just have all the fun you need before you do that and your relatives be damned? The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Oh, yeah.
Famous 877-876-7445.
Mr. Dozier, you're not saying that you want to die.
No, I'm not saying that at all, Phil. I'm saying that if I were to go out, somebody say to me, how do you want to go out? Well, ideally, I'd like to go out in a Daytona 500 race on a backstretch and have that car go airborne. And then I've got one here, and just bear with me, Phil, and I will. Here's one from the 1950s, I think.
They're moving faster now.
All right, now
look at 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, 200 miles an hour. That's what I'm talking about. See that? See, look at right there.
Pace cars off.
I can't see what you're looking at.
Well, this is a race. They had the largest crash up to that point in NASCAR history, 68 cars. And this gentleman, Glenn Fireball Roberts, the gentleman I'm talking about, you want to know why they called him Fireball? Because that's what he became. And he was a great driver, but on this day, he was not just a great driver. He became, in all reality, a fireball. It was what he was. It's what he became. And it's almost as if you could say that he went from being a man to the sun. You understand what I'm saying, Phil?
No, I don't. And I think it's a ghoulish thing to even consider or even want. Our number is 877-876. Phil, here is Colleen in Detroit. Go ahead, Colleen. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Vernon Dozier.
Well, I don't understand is, like, does he want to go out in a flaming ball of glory or something and show off to his family, like, I live life, you know. If you have enough money to do that, why don't you take a rocket ship into the sun, and then we can all see that on the news, and, you know, and then his family can be in poverty because all the money will go to California. I mean, apparently he has some...
Well, ma'am, No, ma'am, no. What I'm saying is, there's no need. I think when you make out your will too early, you rob yourself of the joy of life. So what I'm saying to people who are my age, I'm saying, make sure you squeeze every single solitary nanosecond out of this life, and then do your living
well. You don't want to be Evel Knievel either. I mean, you don't. Why would you want to do that?
Of course I do. Why wouldn't I want to? Why wouldn't I want to enjoy my life to the most of my ability? Why wouldn't I want to do that?
But you're leaving your family impoverished.
That's the breaks. That's the breaks. That's the beauty of life. What I'm saying is, who says I'm going to die? I'm saying, yes, I would like to die, but I'm not going to try.
Wait. Hold on for a minute. You're talking about Fireball Roberts and all this jazz. What do you want to do?
I want to go down to 200 miles an hour on the backstretch of the Daytona 500. If I lose control of the car, I'm hoping I become airborne, of course. Wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't if I lose control of the car. No, I wouldn't. And plus, on top of that, I lose control of the car. Now I die, and I haven't done my living will.
No, you missed it, and this lady missed it, too. No, both of you missed it. I said, before I ever get into that car, I would hope that that would be the point where I realized I've lived enough, my living will is done.
You would hope, but you don't know.
No, I do not know. I do not know. But the lady asked me, do I want to become the sun? Yes.
You want to become a flaming ball of fire, but you don't care whether your kids are taken care of.
Oh, would you come on? They're adults. We're not talking about orphans. These are adults with their own children.
But you've got all of these assets, Vernon, that you're going to just turn over to the state of California because maybe I made out my will and maybe I didn't. Am I ready to die? Yes, I am. But, oh, gee, am I a fireball? No, I'm not. I mean, so much is left up to chance.
And that's life, my friend. That's life.
Well, instead, why don't you go to, like, a soup kitchen and be the best soup kitchen guy ever? Or something.
Wow. Well, now, hold on for a minute. Let me just... There's your round of applause. Are you kidding? I got a life to live.
No,
I got a lot of living to do.
I got a lot of living to do. It's all about you.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Well, what about your family?
I hope your family understands.
You're about to say you hope my family starves. You were about to say you hope my family starves.
All right, let's take another call. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Thank you.
All right, Colleen, thank you very much. Here is Carrie in Macon, Georgia. Go ahead, Carrie. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
I think he just feels guilty because he sees his behavior in his children from what he did himself to his own parents.
I did not. What are you talking about? My own
parents. If you see bloodsuckers in your children, is that how you acted on your father's deathbed? Did you wait for him to die where you get his money? My parents are over 65. They have a will. They're living their life to the best of their ability. They're traveling. They're having fun. And I hope they spend every penny they have.
Here's an interesting thing. You just told me you know they have a will. You know why? Because you were picking through their personal effects.
Do you know why?
What a thing to say.
And that's what adults do when they have children. They make out a will.
How do you know? How do you know they made out a will? Were you going through
the safety
deposit box?
No, because they told me.
Well,
Me and my sister divide their estate 50-50 if they have any left. I hope they spend every penny on themselves and have fun. You didn't go through the shoebox under your mother's bed.
All
right, listen, good point, Carrie. Thank you. Vernon, good luck.
No, I'm going to be the son. The son and the father.
Phil Henry.
Going through the shoebox under her mother's bed.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Another thing I wrote down was, can we have another fundraiser?
This is a Prince George's County School District parent calling to thank you.
We're not going to have babies. We're not going to have sex. Or at least we're going to be protected if we're going to do something. So that's
bleeping
really...
being retarded.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the News Talk and Entertainment Show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go anywhere, including through that looking glass and beyond, to take you places other talk shows cannot go. Sometimes we get scarred. Sometimes we're burned. Sometimes we get airborne. Sometimes we're right off the track and, you know, fireball Roberts. A kid gets sent home from school wearing a Steelers jersey. You can't do that when it's Seahawk Day. And a grumpy substitute teacher in Florida attacks his students. The most and least expensive cards to insure in 2011. And 877-876-7445, our number. And our website is philhenryshow.com. A backstage pass, the BSP, is what affords you an opportunity to take a look at us doing the show, performing the show, as well as listening to it. And you can listen to our archives, our podcasts, our classic podcasts, our news feed, our email response, all there at philhenryshow.com. So I thought what I would do here, and we have Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. How you guys doing?
I'm doing all right. I didn't think you were going to survive, man.
Yeah, you look bad.
Well, it's been it's some tough shows, man.
You look like you're going to cry.
I wasn't going to cry.
Well, you know, you look like you weren't going to make it the next hour.
It's been some tough shows the last couple of weeks, man. It's just been very tough shows since before Christmas. But I think maybe we're through it. I don't know. I just, I think probably because there's, you know, listening goes down around the holidays, okay?
Yeah, and then it goes down about when you come on.
Exactly. When I come, will you shut up?
Ow!
Then it goes down when you come on. In any event, it goes down around Christmas time, and it'll pick back up probably, right about now. Anyway. It's what we call sets in use. All right. Top 10 most and least expensive cars to insure. When I was telling you guys about cars, you know, the other day.
Yeah.
And about the big pieces of garbage that I've driven.
You talked about that Volkswagen.
Oh, I had a Volkswagen that was caved in. I had all kinds of stuff, man. I had cars that weren't insured. And then I had cars that had basic insurance. And then I got married. And my wife was in the insurance business, and her father, my father-in-law, was in the insurance business. And so I went from having just the bare minimum of insurance to being gold-plated, basically. But this story is interesting to me because these are the top 10 most and least expensive cars to insure in 2011.
What about that Gecko?
What about the Gecko?
It's not about that insurance.
We ain't talking about that. I don't want to talk about that. We're talking about the cars.
Oh.
The Gecko.
I heard that in the 21st century.
What are you guys talking about insurance? Let's just talk about the cars for starters. Top 10 least expensive cars to insure. What's the least expensive car to insure in America? The Toyota Highlander costs you $1,154 a year to insure. Number 9 is the Ford Escape, $1,150 to insure. Number 8. The Toyota Sienna, $1,142. The Honda Odyssey, $1,138. The Jeep Wrangler, so far I've got two American and three Japanese cars. The Jeep Wrangler, $1,131. Nissan, another Japanese car, $1,127. Honda Odyssey, the LX, $1,114. Toyota Sienna LE and the Toyota Sienna, $1,107 and $1,100 even. And then the least expensive car in the planet... On the planet, the Chrysler Town and Country. All right.
That's American.
Yes, it is. That's the least expensive car to insure, the Chrysler Town and Country. I couldn't tell you what a Town and Country looks like. What does it look like, man?
It's probably like, ain't that one car, that town car?
No, it ain't the town car. That's a big-ass car. Now, the 10 most expensive cars... To insure. Now, is this is with the calendar year changing from 2010 to 2011. Insurance adjusters have compiled their actuarial tables, and that means a new list of the cheapest and most expensive vehicles to insure for the new year. In this case, insure.com recently conducted a survey of the nation's... Where do you think somebody's from if they say insurance?
What do you mean?
If someone, instead of saying insurance, they say insurance, where do you think they're from?
I don't know.
Oklahoma. Started.
How do you know that, man?
Because somebody I know is from Oklahoma, and that's how they say it. I don't know. In any event, you know me. I like accents. So number 10 of the 10 most expensive cars to insure, this is the 10th most expensive car to insure, and this according to insure.com. It is the Mercedes-Benz G55 AMG $3,086.49 a year. The 9th most expensive car to insure is the Aston Martin DB9 Volante, $3,088.96. The Aston Martin DB9 Volante. The 8th most expensive car to insure, you got it, the Porsche 911 Carrera. What do you mean, you got it? How's anybody going to know?
Man, I don't know nothing about these cars.
Well, they're expensive, Jack. No, it's the Porsche 911 Carrera. Well, that's a nice one. $3,092. The 7th most expensive car to insure in America, and perhaps, yeah, in America, because this is American dollars. Why am I saying in the world? By the way, just to take a break here, somewhat unsurprisingly, the least expensive vehicles are dominated by minivans. That's what we were listening to when we were talking about the Highlander Escape and the Sienna. minivans, while the most expensive list is filled with high-powered jamming machines. So here we go, the top 10. Mercedes-Benz, where were we?
Number 7.
Number 7, the Mercedes-Benz C11 600, baby, that 600 series. Oh, yeah.
That's a beauty, man.
That is $3,114. Number 6, the Aston Martin DB9. We had an Aston Martin DB9 Volante, which is a smaller. This is the Aston Martin DB9, $3,120. The 5th most expensive car to insure in America, the Mercedes-Benz S65 AMG, $3,220. The 4th most expensive car to insure, the Mercedes-Benz SL63 AMG, $3,263.
What's that mean, SL and then the S?
The SL is a longer sedan. It's a sedan, and the L is for longer. Seriously.
No, man, that probably means something, like, really tricky.
No, it doesn't mean anything tricky. The SL is a sedan that's longer. You got the S65, and the SL is a longer sedan. That's number 4. Number 3, the BMW 750. Oh, yeah, $3,280. And the BMW 750i. There's the BMW 750Li, excuse me, $3,280. And the BMW 750i, same price, $3,280. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, the most expensive. Now, I thought I just saw the SL AMG. SL65 AMG is the same car. The most expensive car to insure in America is the Mercedes-Benz SL65 AMG, $3,543.
What about your car?
My car, the AMC Hornet.
No, man.
Well, I'm not going to tell you about my car, but that's the $3,543 a year for the Mercedes-Benz SL65 is some other different kind of. I think somebody screwed up with this list. But I had my cars. I had two Volkswagens. Then I had a 69 Falcon. I had two Volkswagens. I had a 65 GTO.
Yeah, you tell me about a GTO, son of a bitch, and blew up.
It did blow up. It blew up in Texas. I'll never forget. I was driving from Florida to Texas, and this was in 1975, and I had this 64 GTO Pontiac. And the alternator, the flywheel on the alternator froze up somewhere in East Texas. I'll never forget because I was in the middle of nowhere, man. You ever been to Texas?
Uh-oh.
One half of Texas is like a desert, and the other half of Texas is green. Oh, it's gorgeous, you know. My car froze up in the green part of Texas in January, and man, was it cold. And I look down, and the alternator light is on. I wheeled it into a, I'll never forget, I wheeled it into a gas station, and it was just one guy, you know, like a gas station. Says, how you doing? I said, well, not too good, man. So we flip open the hood. And the wheel is frozen. I can see the alternator wheel is frozen. And it's sheared off the fan belt, or one of the belts. So I was on my way to California. The car had not cost me a lot to buy. The guy says to me, I can get the part. It's going to be 48 hours. And I'm telling you, I'm at a gas station, and all around me is prairie and cow area, you know.
Was there cow?
It was not, there wasn't even cow. It was just space for cow. So I had a gas station, and then just all dedicated to cow, you know. Nothing, man.
Well, what about like a town?
If there was a town, I didn't see it. I'm sure the town was down this road where, you know, it was Kilgore, Texas. I didn't see it. So the guy says to me, it's going to be 48 hours. I said, you know what I said to the guy? I said, you can have the car.
What?
I gave him the car, and I gave him the pink slip. I said, take it.
Man, that's something only a guy do when he's 22 or 23.
I did it. I said, take the car. And he said, sure, you know. I mean, I gave this a 62, 63 GTO, whatever it was. Because I was done with this thing, man. I'd put a lot of money into it, and it was, I bought it off of this guy. I'll never forget the cat I bought it off of. This dude by the name of Jack, what the hell was his name? There was Jim Beam, who was from Oklahoma, and the other guy was Jack something. And these two Jack balls came. They were cement finishers that I knew. I used to finish cement. And this was after I got out of cement finishing. I was in radio at this time, but these two guys were construction workers that I knew. And the one guy had just gotten out of prison, and the other guy walked with a limp. and I found out that this guy walked with a limp. Why? Not because he was in bed with another guy's wife, but because he caught his wife in bed with another guy, and that guy shot him.
You're kidding me, man. Usually it would be the other way around everything.
Didn't work that way for him. So this guy's walk. So he sold me his GTO, and I wound up putting a couple, three bills into it, and in those days a lot of money. So I just said, you take the car.
Well, why would you do that?
Then I got out on the Interstate 10 on the on-ramp, and I stuck my thumb out. And I hitchhiked all the way into Dallas. I got one ride, took me all the way into Dallas, and it was a Navy recruiter, if you could believe this. And
guy tried to get you recruited and everything?
He tried to recruit me into the Navy. He did. Guy was a nice guy. And we're driving along, and he says, I'm going into Dallas. I'm going to the U.S. Navy. I'm a Navy recruiter. I said, really? So then I told him my brother had been in the Navy. He said, well, I'll tell you what, man. The guy's giving me the pitch. Man, I live all over the world. My wife, I got a wife and daughter, and man, we've been PX, and you can, you know, this and that, and this and that, and you can get your free money and or whatever the hell, you know, and the groceries are cheap, man, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, that sounds really cool, you know, whatever. He said, yeah, okay, what do you think about it, man, you know. And anyway, he says to me, now, see that bus there? I said, yeah, get on that bus. That'll take you to the airport. I go, great. So I get on this bus, and there's a bunch of other guys that are about my age, and they all have green duffel bags like I do, except all of these guys are going to the naval base in San Diego.
They think you own that too?
Yeah, they did, because the bus takes us to the Dallas airport, and I see Delta Airlines, and I hit the, you know, you pull down the cord.
Yeah.
And the bus driver's looking at me like, where the hell do you think you're going? I said, I'm getting the hell off of here. That's what I'm doing. Have a nice day. So I got a free ride to the thing.
Oh, I didn't. That's what a guy told you. It didn't cost you anything.
Yeah, so he dumped me off of the bus. I got a free ride on the bus, and I flew into L.A., and that was it. That's my story. And was that car insured? I'll never know.
Maybe you got it insured, you forgot.
Probably. We'll be back here. World-famous Phil Henry Show. A radio station owner threatens to shoot up a rival station, and we'll tell you why, as if he needs a reason. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
It's the Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, tell another one.
Well, I don't know if I should tell that part of the story. No, I'm not going to tell that part of the story.
Oh, come on. Now you let the cat out of the bag, man.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Why not?
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not telling that part of the story. I'm not doing it.
Man, now you let the cat out of the bag, you got to tell it.
Yeah, because the people don't want you to tell it.
People may want me to tell it. I cannot tell it. I will not tell it. It involved a youthful indiscretion, and I'm not going to tell the story. I don't give a damn how... You know, we're honest enough on this show, man. Get yourself a BSP and look at this video cast and see how honest it gets. I am not telling that part of the story. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Can I tell people a little...
You ain't telling anybody anything.
It has to do with homosexuality. Can you shut up?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Oh, what, you're homophobe?
No, I'm not, but no, it doesn't. Boys sent home from school for wearing a Steelers jersey on Seahawk Appreciation Day. Yes, Bud Dickman was sent home.
Uh-huh. Shut up.
Anyway, a 13-year-old student at Tacoma's Truman Middle School just wanted to show his team spirit when he wore a Pittsburgh Steelers jersey to the school's Seahawk Appreciation Day on Friday. Really? Well, guess what? He violated what they wanted him to do, this little piece of dirt. I'm joking, but still in all, kid. School administrator sent Grendon Bailey home saying his... That's a hell of a name to give a kid, isn't it, Grendon?
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. It just sounds Grendon. It sounds like something out of Middle Earth.
Yeah, that's sort of like a hobbit or something.
No, what do you mean?
Grendon. It just doesn't sound like a human being's name. Anyway, school administrator sent Grendon Bailey home saying his choice of clothing was inappropriate and that Seahawks shirts or collars were the only exception allowed outside the school uniform's normal strict dress code. Now, the seventh grader says he feels it was unfair for the school to single him out for punishment simply because he and his family, oh, God, please don't tell me there's some parents behind this, are Steeler fans and not Seahawk fans. Not everyone is a Seahawk fan, and if they got to wear their team stuff, then I should too, Grendon said, by way of my thinking. Anyway, the school district says Grendon and all other students were warned on Thursday that anyone who didn't want to wear Seahawk colors should wear their normal school uniform, which is limited to certain styles and colors of clothing. In fact, Grendon admits that he specifically asked the school's vice principal the day before if he could wear a Steelers jersey and was told he could not because it was the Seahawk Spirit Day. All right, so far so good, right?
What do you mean?
Well, the school said thus, the kid said thus, the school said no, 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 no. So the kid is aware of what, you know, he had to do.
Yeah, so far.
All right. This boy came in a different color, a different team, and he was asked if he didn't want to participate in the Seahawk Colors Day, then he could wear his uniform, said Tacoma School District spokeswoman Stacy Flores. Now, Grendon's dad, Stoughton B. Bailey Sr., says his son and the whole family are diehard Pittsburgh fans, and his son felt he should be able to show his team spirit like the other students at the school. I didn't force him to do it. I said I'd stand behind him if he wanted to do it, and this morning I gave him a choice. I said, what do you want to wear? And he said, I'm wearing my Steelers outfit. Grendon's dad also says he sent his son to school with a note explaining the boy's decision so he wouldn't get into trouble. But school officials refused to even read it. He was immediately told that he had to leave and change his clothes or face a school suspension for the day, Stoughton B. Bailey Sr. said. Where are these people from, anyway?
You said they come off from Middle Earth.
I think they are. Stoughton and his son, Grendon. Grendon's dad picked him up after school after the officials refused to let him attend classes in his Steelers regalia. Both father and son were in tears. No, they're just kidding. The Steelers are facing the Baltimore Ravens, the AFC playoffs this weekend, and Grendon says he has no plans to watch the Seahawk Bear game. Okay. Now, you heard the story, right?
Yeah.
And you heard that the outcome was, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. Why is this news?
Well, because
You guys, there's no reason it's news. The parents didn't make an issue out of it. The kid blew it, and he was totally honest about it. The school made the ruling. The kid violated the rule. The dad seems a little thick, but he didn't make a big issue out of it. Got his kid in trouble. I'll stand behind you, blah, blah, blah. But it was taken care of. So how did this make the news?
They probably got it on the police radio.
Police radio? What do you mean the police radio?
How are they going to get on police radio?
That's how you find out about news.
You find out about news that the cops are going to. The cops didn't go to this.
Yeah, but they know about crime and everything.
This ain't no crime, man. It's a kid going to school in his Seahawk or his Steeler jersey. So how did this make the news?
Maybe somebody called him and everything.
Called the TV station. That's exactly right. That's what I think happened. I don't know whether it was Grendon or whether it was Stoughton B. Bailey Sr. Good God. Who was the other guy? What was the name of that guy in Gilligan's Island?
Lovey.
Lovey. Anyway, I think someone called up the TV station, and the TV station on a slow news day decided to send a camera crew out there and report on some kid getting suspended for wearing the wrong... Do you understand, folks, that at any other time in the history of this planet, that wouldn't even be news? That wouldn't even have made the Daily Walnut there in Tacoma. All right, we're coming back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. A father bitches about an early robocall to his kid's school. There's another dad that's upset with something. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Right, welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show, here on NewsHour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. A radio station owner served a restraining order over threatening a shootout against a rival. This was in Greeley, Colorado. A controversial message about Martin Luther King Jr. Has a school member in the northern Colorado city of Greeley in hot water, and now a restraining order has been filed against him. Now, what does this mean? A school board member, okay. Board member Brent Reese owns Pirate Radio, and his message against King has led to threats against him.
During his radio show, Reese said about King, he's not a legitimate reverend, he's not a bona fide PhD, and his name is not really Martin Luther King. What's left is just a sexual degenerate. The letter was reportedly from a member of the Aryan Nation. Since Reese received the letter, he has read it every year during his radio show. What's this guy's name? He's a school board member in Greeley, Colorado, named Brett Reese, who got a letter from a guy in Aryan Nation, and he reads this garbage on the air. Okay. Reese started the firestorm that has now been that has now seen a competing radio station's general manager take out a restraining order against the board member. KFKA's owner John Sasso says Reese left him a threatening voicemail in which Reese allegedly threatened a shootout because sponsors are pulling their support from Reese's station and instead sponsoring KFKA. They don't know anything else except they've had some people call them up and they say, we hate the Brett Reese bastard. He's a racist, Reese said. Well, you are, Brett. I am no racist. That doesn't make any sense at all. Even though I think Martin Luther King's a degenerate and that really isn't his name. He's not a PhD and I'm reading a letter from the Aryan Nation. What's that got to do with it? They don't know me, but we're losing sponsors because of it. That really bothers me. Here's a great idea, Brett. Don't read a letter from Aryan Nation, you stupid bastard. Oh, my God. Are you crazy? Well, I should be able to read. Yes, you should be able to read anything you want. Anything you want. Well, then why are they pulling out? Because they think you're a douchebag. Well, why do they think that? Oh, I don't know. Does it have something to do with the fact that you're reading a letter from an Aryan Nation guy calling Martin Luther King a sexual degenerate, a man who is revered right alongside of some of the great Americans in history, a man who, you know, is a great American? Oh, I don't think so. All right. Anyway, Reese apparently believed that Sasso, which reminds me of that character, and what was that, Bud?
Yeah, that's Carlito's Way. That's Sasso, man. That's Sasso. Now they open up the trunk on the Belt Parkway. Ooh, that's some stink you're going to make.
Man, you know that movie backward and forward.
I do. I love that movie.
That's right. That was, all right. Reese apparently believed that Sasso had gone to sponsors and asked them to stop supporting the station who reads racist letters, according to an unidentified staffer at Reese's station. We've been branded as some sort of racist radio station. There are no facts to that whatsoever, Reese said. The restraining order will be argued in a court a week from Friday. You know, these people, these bona fide racists, this is the game they're playing now. Well, just because I read a letter from a guy who is in Aryan Nation doesn't mean that I agree with him. Well, you're reading the letter. Yes, because this I do agree with the letter, but that doesn't make me a racist. I see. And you just don't want to have to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. That's right. Why are we taking, you know, we don't need that day. That's the days are for George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, well, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. So that's okay with you? Sure, it's okay with me. I'm not a racist. So they do that dance. All right, let's listen to this, man. It's probably some of the same stuff that we've been talking about. But here's a voicemail allegedly left by Brett Reese, who's the guy that reads the Aryan Nation letter, and it has landed the station owner in hot water. Here's the voicemail.
January 12 at 1:56 p.m.
Hey, Justin, it's Brett Reese, and I guess I just wanted to let you know that I was hoping we could look something out for having all of your sales guys contacting all of my sponsors at this particular time. I hope you don't think that things are falling apart, and I'll give you by the end of today to pull all of your sales people off of my sponsors.
But anyway, here Reese tells KDVR-TV that he's upset that he and his station is being branded as racist.
Pirate radio may go away because our sponsors are leaving us. They don't know anything else except they've had some people call him up and say, we hate this. It's terrible. Brett Reese is a racist.
Right.
I am no racist. That doesn't make any sense at all. They don't know me, but we're losing sponsors because of it. We've been branded some sort of racist radio station. There's no facts to that whatsoever.
But what's this guy reading a letter for? I don't understand that.
Yeah, and the letter is from, he said it's the letter was reportedly from a member of the Aryan Nation. And he got the letter, he's read it every year during his radio show.
Well, how many years has he been reading this thing?
I don't know.
It's reportedly from the Aryan Nation. I mean, it's enough. This guy's a douchebag in my book just by what he describes Reverend King as, because these are accusations that have been made over and over and over again and have been debunked over and over and over again. And they are still brought up because most people don't know anything about Martin Luther King. They know he was, most people know he was a very, you know, he was a great man. He suffered quite a bit of harassment and went through a lot of hell and threats of violence and ultimately was murdered on behalf of a pretty decent principle. But nonetheless, most people, that's as far as it goes. So you can say to them, well, you know, he's a sexual degenerate. You know that Martin Luther King had sexual liaisons. He was not faithful to his wife. This is true. However, in my book, and this is just Phil Henry, you don't have to take it from me, I've always said, you know, sometimes you have to separate the great things a person does from the reality of their lives. And sometimes the two things don't necessarily match up. That, I you know, I've always believed that. I can't throw out someone's work because their life was imperfect, but...
Well, I don't understand that. You guys gonna be... He's a reverend and everything.
I know he was a reverend. I'm not... I know that. But even the work... But the work that Martin Luther King did, for me, transcended him being a reverend. It was him being an American talking about human rights, you know, and fighting for human rights.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's fighting for human rights and he's getting some on the side, how bad is that, you know?
What are you talking about, you two nuts?
Well, I mean, he's getting a little on the side.
You shut up about getting it on the side. Talking about a great man. That's my opinion anyway. And I will never waver from that, and that's how I think, man. So screw you guys, okay?
I ain't saying anything great. I'm just saying he's getting some on the side.
Well, you forget about getting some on the side. What is it with you guys? This guy here, this Reese freak, is reading some letter about this, that, this, that. Don't tell me how much research has this guy, Brett Reese, done into the life of Martin Luther King. Every year this guy's reading this letter, whether it's from Aryan Nations or not, all kinds of garbage in this letter, and he's reading it to slander the guy. Has Brett Reese ever actually looked into the life of Martin Luther King? And if he did, and he actually saw the truth, would he recognize it, even if it jumped up and bit him on the nose? I doubt it. Hollywood's top on-screen couples, Rupert Grint and Emma Watson. Oh, that's great.
What's that about?
I don't know. In the old days, couples like Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, they were all that, man, and, you know, in a cup of tea. They used to appear in many films together. These days, you usually only see pairs joining up again in sequels. To find the top-earning on-screen couples of all time, Forbes added up the global box office for every film the pair appeared in together using data from Box Office Mojo. All right? So should we start with number? These are the top on-screen pairings of all time. These are the people that kick ass when it comes to money. You ain't going to recognize half of these. This is horse dung, man.
I don't know. That was an interesting story.
No, I'm glad you pulled it, okay? I'm not criticizing, but I don't think people are going to necessarily recognize some of the names. Here is the number, well, did they say 10? Here's number 9, Ben Stiller and Terry Polo. $1 billion. That's right, Little Fockers might be one of the worst reviewed films of 2010, but it is making a lot of money. So far, the Meet the Parents trilogy has earned $1 billion at the box office, and with those kinds of numbers, a fourth movie can't be far behind. Expect more trouble for the young marrieds played by Stiller and Polo. $1 billion, man. Number 8, Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow. $1.2 billion. We didn't include this couple when we first did this list last year, like anybody's noticed, because after the first Iron Man, they still weren't really a couple. But in the second movie, Downey's Tony Stark admitted his feelings for Paltrow's Pepper Potts. No word on if Paltrow will make an appearance in the upcoming film The Avengers, which will feature Iron Man, among other heroes. So it's Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow. Number 7 is Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen. Hayden Christensen didn't make his Star Wars debut as Anakin Skywalker until his fifth film, Attack of the Clones. Your favorite movie, bud.
That movie, that was way. That, in other words, that was a movie that was way better.
Yeah. Hey, can I play something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Jews are good with money.
I just want to throw that.
You get out of here and I'll do that stuff. What's that about?
Talking about movies.
What a anti-Semite, man.
No kidding.
No, I'm not.
Anyway, Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen, they didn't make the Star Wars debut as Anakin Skywalker until his fifth movie, Attack of the Clones, but his relationship with Natalie Portman's Padme was crucial to the sci-fi tale as the 1.5 billion there. All right, man. So that's number seven. Number six is Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox. Transformers is really all about robots that turn into cars, but somewhere in the first two movies was a love story between LaBeouf's Sam Witwicky and Fox's Michaela Baines. The two couldn't have been that inseparable, though, because director Michael Bay decided to jettison Fox in the third movie in favor of Victoria's Secret model Rosie Huntington Whiteley. Oh, God.
What?
And number five, Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, they made $1.8 billion, while romance is secondary and somebody, you know what, this is...
Just do the number one.
The number one couple, Rupert Gint and Emma Watson.
What? I don't understand that.
Get out of here with this, will you? Viggo Mortensen and Liv Tyler. When they talk about on-screen couples, they'd ought to be talking about couples that people recognize, that have been in movies together for a long, long time, people that have been involved in the movies together over and over and over, you know, maybe people are going to be, you know, appearing in a movie again, but not this stuff, dude. All right, we'll be coming back here on the Phil Henry Show, our wrap-up segment. Did a dad complaining about getting robocalls go too far, and a mom forces her kid to get waxed? Just a whole bunch of dad and moms being completely and totally unacceptable when we come back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
It's the Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry.
All right, I got a story here, and I played the audio at the beginning of the show, not really knowing what it was, and I thought it was funny sounding. Now that I know what it is,
still funny sounding.
No, it ain't funny sounding. That's just it. I don't like it at all, and so I'm going to have to warn you. But on some level, I feel I must play it for you. Now, this is one of these, another clip from Toddlers and Tiaras. This is the show, you know, on, what the hell is it on, TLC?
I think it's on TLC, I'm not sure.
How come TLC's getting off the hook here, man? What are they on? They're on TLC. I think every time we do a story about this messed up show, we ought to mention, I don't think TLC's doing a bad thing. I think TLC's doing a good thing with this show. I think it's like, I think it's this ugly train wreck of a reality show about children, beauty, little babies in beauty pageants, right? But what I can't stand about this is you're going to hear at the very beginning this woman, and she's having her daughter's eyebrows waxed, and you'll hear that the child is in discomfort. And it kind of bothers me a lot, and I'll tell you why. I can't think of any pursuit, I can't think of any activity that a child is engaged in that you put that child through pain in order to engage in that pastime. I'm not talking about going to the doctor. And you know, all these simple-minded bastards, that's what they'll say. Well, they go to the doctor, don't they? They got to go to the doctor. They got to get shots. They have to have that. They got to go to the dentist. Well, what about Little League, don't you? Yeah, in Little League, you play baseball. There's nothing about the game of baseball that says you must go through pain. There's nothing. If you play baseball, you must feel pain. There's nothing at all about putting a child unwillingly through pain about any one of those pursuits. A kid playing football, baseball, anybody that puts their kid into a sport that the child is afraid of, that the child doesn't want to play, and they repeatedly involve that kid in that sport, even though the kid is uncomfortable playing it, you're probably getting into some area of, like, really weird, you know, sort of strange. I'd be calling it abuse, but it's, you know, what's the point? But having a little child who is in a beauty pageant, something that kids don't have to be in, and then waxing her eyebrows, which is real weird, man. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, you got to do it for a beauty pageant.
Oh, is that what you got to do? You got to have it for a beauty pageant, huh?
Yeah, but I'm a little kid, man.
Well, what difference does it make? They got to do a bikini wax, too.
A bikini? Well, I had to belt you for that.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. Another week, another episode of Toddlers and Tiaras, and another horrifying act of child cruelty. And they don't want to come out and call it what it is, child abuse. While there were no cone bras this time, there was an absolutely terrified five-year-old, Alexis, whose mother, Nicole, forced her to get her eyebrows waxed. While it's understandable that a child wouldn't want hot wax poured onto her face and then ripped off by a salon worker, in this case, the young girl had actually experienced a traumatizing wax prior to this incident, in which the wax was too hot and accidentally tore off her skin.
Man, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, her mother admits this to the cameras while her daughter, who is screaming and shaking, is being cajoled by some salon worker with a bag of candy. Now, this is not a vaccine that they're getting. It's not an inoculation that they're getting. They're not going in for any kind of medical procedure or dental procedure, which is ultimately good and protects the health of the child. No, this is some bizarre, freakish exercise. It's a beauty pageant for kids. Now, who the hell is... Here Nicole explains why she's... Oh, this is the mother. She explains why she's having her five-year-old daughter, now, waxed.
We get Alexis' eyebrows waxed, number one, because it's a little unibrow and they grow together.
Wait a minute. Is she speaking English there?
I don't know.
What is that?
I don't know. It's like, it sounds like English.
What is that, Canadian or something?
I don't know.
It sounds like she's gagging on something. Pardon me for saying that, but...
We get Alexis' eyebrows waxed, number one, because she has a little unibrow and they grow together, so we got to get rid of that. Two, in between, and then maybe a little bit right here.
Is she Daffy Duck or something?
I don't know, man. It sounds like it's a combination of duck and Canadian.
A combination of duck and Canadian?
We get Alexis' eyebrows waxed, number one, because she has a little unibrow and they grow together, so we got to get rid of that. Two, in between... And then maybe a little bit right here.
Don't do my eyeballs.
Okay, she's just going to look at us without
you. Don't do my eyeballs.
We'll do it after we do your eyebrows, okay?
Oh, really? Oh, that's great. And after we take you out of the gas chamber, a special prize after we do your eyebrows.
Crap.
All right. After Nicole explains her daughter's past bad experience, Alexis has her eyebrows waxed.
Yeah, be real still, okay? She had a bad experience with not just
the ability
to wear, and the wax was way too hot, and it actually ripped off her skin, so she's been kind of terrified ever since.
Oh, isn't that, it's...
Don't tear it! Don't tear it!
Ah! It's all done! It's all done!
No, you tear it, though!
Yeah, but it's all done! See? Look how pretty it looks! That wasn't bad, was it? Okay, let me...
That wasn't bad at all! Just because I talk like... She talks like she's... Well, I better not say it.
Got something in her mouth.
Shut up. The waxing isn't done yet, though. No, no, not at all. The torture and the hell for this child is not done. There is Mama. She's talking about it all. And here we go.
I would like to say that beauty doesn't play a part in wedding pageants, but they're called beauty pageants for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
Don't tear it!
Don't
tear it!
We're almost done.
You dirty whores. You dirty whores.
Hey, you're all done. Normally, I would
put
her down and ripped it off.
Oh! Ah!
Oh, my God, those bitches.
Man, that bad.
That's not a shot the child's getting. She's not getting her teeth filled. She's not going to... That's a beauty pageant, and that mother, good God almighty, she had a brain, she'd have it out bouncing it up and down, trying to shoot hoops with it.
Boy, that is pretty bad.
Bad? I'm telling you, TLC's doing a service, but I can't understand how they let this stuff slide. I don't know. I can't stand that, man. I've seen kids crying because they're going to get a shot, but that's for their own good. Getting their eyebrow wet. And did you hear that dumbass? She's got a bad unibrow. Are these people from the planet Earth? I don't know. Sometimes I hear people talking, man. I don't know what the hell.
I think that is an American accent crossed with duck.
Crossed with duck.
I think it is, man.
That's the first accent we have ever heard that is a combination American, Canadian, and duck.
I think she was mothered by a duck or something.
That woman come from duck, I tell you. All right. Our show is produced by Jason Rance. Our technical director is Charles Wagon. Our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. PhilHendryShow.com is our website. And
boy, what a headache.
I think, man. All right. Onward and upward, baby. Tomorrow night, our live show on KFI AM 640 Los Angeles. Watch for the video cast at PhilHendryShow.com.
Crap.
Phil Hendry.